In reality, people's accounts are being compromised, organizations, companies are being broken into on a daily basis, but nobody's talking about it, nobody's aware of it, and that becomes the problem.
Welcome to the Consistent and Predictable Income Community Podcast. The CPI methodology is the only system that teaches the proprietary process of CPI, which is the key to having consistent and predictable income for salespeople without letting time, money, and relationships fall through the cracks.
World-renowned cybersecurity expert with more than 30 years of network security experience, Dr. Eric Cole is a distinguished cybersecurity expert and keynote speaker who helps organizations curtail the risk of cyber threats. In this brand new episode of the CPI podcast, Dr. Eric Cole will discuss proven and effective strategies on how to protect your business from cyber threats.
My name is Dan Roshan. I'm the host of the CPI podcast, which is a real estate show designed to help top producing agents leverage and scale your business, allowing you to earn more money in less time for seasoned agents to help you get to the next level of stable income and for new agents to help you find the right way to freedom and money so that each of you can reach your potential as a person and as a real estate agent, which means you'll have certainty in your future. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy the show.
Hello, today I am joined with Dr. Eric Cole. We're going to talk about the cyber threats and how to protect yourself against those cyber threats. And Dr. Cole is just a wealth of knowledge with a lot of network security experience. He's a keynote speaker, an author, and he's got a book coming up that I want to cyber crisis. I want to dive into that a little bit more, you know, hear about cyber crisis and, you know, talk about the hackers in front of us that are hiding in plain sight. So welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
It is my pleasure. So Eric, so Dr. Cole, so tell me a little bit about yourself.
So I got started in cybersecurity about 30 years ago, where I worked at the CIA and was trying to figure out how you prove whether systems are secure or not. And that took me on an 8-year career of being a professional hacker for the government. And after being a professional hacker for the government for 8 years, I realized two things. One, offense is easy and it got boring and I moved into defense. And the second, I don't like working for bureaucracy and I'm more an entrepreneur. So from there, I've started and sold three different companies over the years, all in the areas of cybersecurity. And believe I'm on a mission. The reason my purpose in life is to make cyberspace a safe place to live, work, and raise a family.
So offense is easy. You'd rather deal with defense. And so I'm inferring that that means that you're a good hacker.
Yeah, it's. I mean, to me, it's one of those fundamental rules, just like the law of gravity that guides things in our physical life. The law of cybersecurity is quite simple. Whenever you add functionality, you decrease security. So any system that has functionality by nature has to have vulnerabilities. And if you understand and know how to find those vulnerabilities, every system is exploitable. And that's why, in my opinion, cybersecurity is not about preventing attacks. It's about timely detection to control the damage.
So it's about getting in front of the attacks before they cause a catastrophe.
Exactly. And to me, it comes down to timely detection. If you look at any of these major breaches where they had 500 million records, what was the reason? They didn't catch it for 3 years. If they caught the attack within 2 or 3 weeks, it would have been 1,000 records and nobody would have known about it. So it's all about that visibility and detection and making sure the adversary doesn't slip under the radar.
So tell us, what does that mean for us? Like for you know, the normal folk that, you know, we all have a computer, we all have an iPhone or an Android, and you know, what does that mean to us? Like, what do we need to be aware of?
To me, what it means to really anyone that uses computers or technology is you have to start asking an additional question. And what I mean by that is most of us ask a single question when we're looking at technology. What is the value or benefit? A great example is Alexa. When Alexa came out, everyone was like, oh, this is so cool. I can say, what's the weather? And it will tell me, and I don't have to walk 3 feet across the room to look out the window, right? Come on. So everyone looked at the value and benefit. And when you do that, you get yourself in trouble. So what I always train people to do is I'm never going to tell you what is secure or not. I'm going to always ask you to ask that second question. What is the security risk? What is the exposure? And then it's quite simple. Does the benefit outweigh the security risk? And I remember when it came out several years ago that Alexa was actually listening in on all your conversations, which always puzzles me when people are like, it's not listening. I'm like, how does it answer you if it's not listening, right? It's just common sense here. And as soon as people realize that, they say, wait a second, the value of having something tell me the weather versus something spying on me and my family is not worth it. So many people pulled Alexa out of the out of their houses or locations. So to me, what cybersecurity means to individuals, always say, what is the value? What is the risk? And make sure you fully understand the risk and then put measures in place to mitigate or reduce that overall risk.
What measures could you put in place?
Once again, you're going to get a theme with me is visibility. So a great example is online banking. Okay. A lot of people get a lot of value and benefit of online banking. You don't have to go to the bank, online pay, but it has a risk where somebody could break into your system and steal your information. So a couple things you do there. First, turn on additional security, two-factor or what we call multi-factor authentication. So every time you log in, you get a unique password, which makes it harder for the adversary. Next, since most people are coming from a set location or a set computer, turn on the location track. So now if every day you're logging in from your computer to check your bank account and you live in Northern Virginia, and all of a sudden somebody from, let's just say Russia or China, I don't know why I picked those countries, but Russia or China starts logging in, it's not going to allow that connection to occur. And then the third one is, and this is a feature that's on all online banking, but it's turned off by default, which is account alerts. So when any time somebody tries to access your account or transfer money, you get a little text message. Now, I know some people say, well, that's an inconvenience. Okay, which would you rather? A text message every time you log in that's an inconvenience, or in 10 or 11 months, because it will happen if you don't have visibility, $5,000 is stolen from your account. You get to pick which option you want. I would take the slight inconvenience over getting an alert over the big inconvenience of having my money stolen. So a lot of it is recognizing security is built in to most applications, but turned off. You need to turn it on, have visibility, and make it harder for the adversary.
So you were part of the Commission on Cybersecurity for President Obama. Is that true?
That is correct.
What did you do in that role?
So several things. I was part of a group of commissioners where we assessed the current state of security in the United States and then provided updates to both the president, his staff, and Congress just on what the real threats and exposures are. Because let's face it, if you watch the media, you get a false impression. You think that there's a SolarWinds once a year, because that seems to happen. There's one big attack, 12 months, and the rest of the time you think everything's great. In reality, people's accounts are being compromised, organizations, companies are being broken into on a daily basis, but nobody's talking about it. Nobody's aware of it. And that becomes the problem. So what we did is just wanted them to realize just how prevalent the problem is and how infiltrated our government and commercial systems are. And a lot of the stuff that we told them 6-7 years ago are things that are now coming out in SolarWinds. And I'm sort of laughing because you have folks in Congress going, why didn't anyone tell us? And I'm like, why didn't anyone listen? Right? We've been trying to tell you, but you just don't want to listen to us.
You're like, I was the guy that told you. Just didn't listen.
You already know 87% of all real estate agents fail in this business. And you also know it doesn't have to be that way. If you're a real estate agent and you're looking for consistent and predictable income, I invite for you to get your free copy of Real Estate Evolution, the 10-step guide to CPI, consistent and predictable income for real estate agents. And you can do so when you visit www.therealestateevolution.com. I'll share with you your book that I authored to show you the way, and it's free. You just have to pay for the shipping. Thanks.
So Cyber Crisis. So that's a book you said that's coming out in about the summertime 2021, somewhere in that ballpark. Is that true?
Correct. It comes out early June. June 5th is the release date. If you look at, this is my eighth book, but this is a shift for me because all my other books were very technical. My first book, Hackers Beware, Advanced Persistent Threat, Network Security Bible. These were all technical books because 20 years ago, I felt that the problem in cybersecurity was we didn't have enough technical people that understood the problem to work at organizations to help secure them. In the last several years, I've switched saying we have enough technical people. The problem is they're not being listened to. The problem is executives, directors, and managers don't really understand what's happening. And I started looking for a resource that I could recommend to my executive clients, and I couldn't find one. So what I've always done in my life is if there's a solution, I recommend it. If there's not a solution, I create one. So I went in and wrote a book where it's Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from the Real Threats in the Virtual World. And it's written in business language. There's very little technical in here. So an executive can pick it up and in a few hours, understand what they need to know. And the big thing of this book is one of my favorite phrases. Smart people know the right answer. Brilliant people ask the right question. So what I have in this book are what are the questions executives need to ask of their security team to see if they have proper security in place.
So it's really geared towards business people, executives, CEOs, et cetera, but even small business owners, I would assume.
Yes. And to be honest with you, and hopefully my publisher doesn't hear this because they'll get mad at me. It's really written for anyone who's non-technical. So parents, teachers, others, but they felt like the biggest gap in the market was really on the business side. So more of the examples are business related, but they can relate to anyone. I talk about online banking. I talk about email. I talk about web surfing and a lot of the common threats that face businesses, executives, and individuals.
So you mentioned a brilliant person would be the one asking the right questions. What's an example of the right question that you would want to ask in regards to avoiding a crisis in cyber?
So to me, on the executive side, the question, that first question that every executive should ask their team is how many attempted attacks do we have occurring against our organization on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis? Because most of them have no idea how bad the problem is. It's sort of like you go to the doctor and you assume you're 100% healthy. Well, we all don't know that's naive, but most business owners assume their organization is 100% secure. Yeah. And that's why when a breach happens, they're shocked, they're surprised, they fire the security person. But when I ask most CEOs, how many attempted attacks do you think there are in your organization? The average answer I get is 5 or 6 a day. And in reality, for those companies, some of these big companies, it's 50 to 60,000 attempted attacks a day against the organization, which tells you two things. One, your security team is doing a lot more than you realize. And two, if you're getting 60,000 attempts a day, one of them is going to get in. You are going to get breached. The only question is how quick do you detect the breach?
So how many attempts would you need to get in? So if working with the CIA, if you were intending to hack into, you know, one of these big companies' infrastructures, how hard would that be for you?
So two general types of attacks. So if we're talking about a quick and easy attack where I just put together a phishing scam, where essentially I send out an email and right now I would pick an email that says 5 of your coworkers tested positive for COVID. Click on this link to see if you've been in contact with them. And that would take me about 10 minutes to do. I would send it out to hundreds of thousands of people at an organization based on LinkedIn. I would do research on LinkedIn, find their email addresses and go after them. And I'd wait for somebody to click on it. Easy, low-hanging fruit. That I would say probably if I send it out to 20,000, I'd get at least a 5% response rate and I'd get in pretty quickly. The other way, if I want to spend 2 or 3 months really focusing on the organization, targeting, understanding their vulnerabilities, understanding where their data is, and do a very strategic style attack, one that a nation state would do, it's going to take one shot because I've done my recon, I've done my research. It takes a couple of months, but it's sort of like asking if somebody puts in enough time, effort, and energy, will they be able to break into your house? Absolutely. Sure. Right? Locks and alarms are meant as deterrents and to keep honest people out. They're not going to keep a well-versed thief out of your house.
So I think the lesson to learn there is, you know, if anybody contacts a consumer, just a general public, you know, or if you're, you know, an employee with an organization, be aware of, you know, don't put any information into that's being solicited from you, you know, and be aware that there's a huge potential for a scam. I mean, the one that you just described, that when you share that with me, I'm just thinking as you're sharing, I'm like, oh my goodness, like I could totally see how that would work. I mean, that would work about as, I mean, a lot of people would fall for that. I mean, that's unfortunate. But yeah, I can see how that could work.
And you want to hear something real scary? So back in February, I did an experiment where I took 50 people from different companies and I gave them a free 30-minute security awareness session. So I asked them to sign up. I didn't tell them what I was doing, but I signed up, and for 30 minutes, I told them in common English about the cybersecurity threats, email phishing, and what they need to do to protect themselves. And at the end of the 30 minutes, I told them about COVID phishing schemes. I actually told them specifically about if you get an email that says five coworkers at your company, and went through the entire scenario with them. 2 hours later, I sent those 50 people that exact scam that I covered in the awareness. 37 of them clicked on it.
Oh my God.
And that's, but the problem is, and this is the thing, when you're about your family, your protection, your safety, and I can get you emotional, I can get you irrational. And it's funny because 30 of the 37 people, within 5 minutes of me sending it and them clicking on it, they email me going, Eric, I think I made a mistake. I clicked on the link, but after I clicked on it, I realized that. So the point is, if you just take a breath and you step back and say, I'm gonna pause on that for 15 minutes and think about it, you'll come up with the correct answer. But these attackers are masters of psychology, and they're gonna get you emotional, time-based, and trick you into clicking the link. And most of the time after people click on the link, they have the aw, you know what moment where they wish they didn't do it.
So tell Dr. Cole, tell us about your business today. So you help people to avoid these cyber threats and to avoid the hackers that are out there hiding in plain sight. Exactly how do you help people?
So my organization today, Secure Anchor, what we really focus on is helping organizations build out a security roadmap that aligns with the business. What I found is a lot of companies have risk assessment and security assessments performed, and they're cookie cutter. They're giving them this big 800-page report. Nobody's going to read it. And you need a $30 million budget and 300 people to implement it. And no one does it. So they check a box for compliance saying, yeah, we had an assessment, but it's really useless to the organization. To me, what I want to do is when I go in and do an assessment, the first 2 to 3 hours of the assessment, I'm sitting down with the finance officer and I want to understand the business. I want to understand what is your revenue and profit margins? What are the business units that makes the most money? Because let's face it, if you're asked the question, how much do you spend on security? It depends. If your organization is only making $3 million profit, then I'm probably going to be spending $100K. If your organization is making $3 billion profit, I'm going to probably be spending $50 million on security. So we really understand the business and organization, and then we build a roadmap that aligns with their budget resources and will actually minimize the highest priority risks. And then the other area we're focusing on is cybersecurity strategy and training up CISOs. Because to me, chief information security officers, over the years, has been a term that's misused. People think of it as a promotion for a technical career track. So if I've worked in IT or a security engineer for 12 years, I threaten to leave the company, you give me the CISO title and we're good. It's not. If you want to be a world-class security engineer, that's great. World-class security engineers make awful CISOs because they think technical. And when you talk to an executive team, you must think business. And if you don't think strategy, you're not going to be effective.
Okay. For the layman, CISO stands for?
Chief Information Security Officer. It's sort of the counterpart to a CIO, a Chief Information Officer. So a CIO, Chief Information Officer, focuses on IT, and a Chief Information Security Officer focuses on cybersecurity.
So let me get this straight. So this is the CISO that's like the CIO that used to work for the CIA that, I'm thinking of other acronyms. Did I get it right? that's in IT. Is that right? Did I get all that right?
Yes.
All right. As long as I understand what you're saying.
You could actually, if you talk to my family, you can also say the CISO that used to be a CIO that works for a CIA that's a PETA, which is a pain in the you know what if you ask my family members. So if you want to throw another acronym in there, we can have some fun.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Recently wrote the book, Real Estate Evolution, the 10-step guide to CPI, consistent and predictable income for real estate agents. I wrote this book because I have sold real estate since 2007 and developed an immense amount of experience and knowledge. During my journey, I've witnessed hundreds
and maybe even thousands of real estate agents fail in this business. And I firmly believe that that's a shame. In Real Estate Evolution, I will show you the exact steps that I have used as a real estate salesperson to sell 1 to 15 homes every single month for the past 129 consecutive months. It took me more than 2 decades to learn the sales and persuasion techniques and more than 1 decade to master the real estate sales techniques to be able to produce the content that makes up this book. It took me more than a year to write at a pace of 3 hours every single day. If you're a real estate agent and you're looking for consistent and predictable income in your business, I invite you to get the book, Real Estate Evolution, and you can get that by visiting www.therealestateevolution.com, and I'll even give it to you for free as long as you pay for the post.
So Eric, so what's the biggest mistake that you've come across that you can share with us? You know, give me an example if you could.
Sure. Biggest mistake that I come across is organizations do not think they're a target. They do not think they're going to be a target. Individuals do not think they're going to be a target. And I'll give you a case that I just finished working on 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
A very nice couple in their 50s. One of their parents passed away. They were all passed away, and they got a $2.3 million inheritance.
Okay.
Both of them weren't making a lot of money. They lived in a very small house. So they got to buy their dream house. They got to buy their dream house. You would know the area, Great Falls, right on the Potomac. Yeah. And they find the perfect house right in their price range, and they go and sign the contract. 2 days before settlement, they get an email from the settlement company saying, this happens quite often, but we need to change the bank that you need to transfer the money to. Here's the new routing information, details, and others. They understood a little bit about threats. So they went in and they sent an email back to the closing company and said, are you sure? That they sent it back to the person who their contact is. It sure, and they wrote back, yes, this happens all the time. It's quite common. You need to make sure you transfer the money at least 36 hours beforehand to make sure the closing goes smoothly. So they transfer their $2.3 million. They show up for closing, and the other side's like, we have a problem. And they go, what's the problem? You never transferred the money. And they go, well, yes, we did. And to make a long story short, the settlement company, which are these small, tiny companies, their security is not very good. Their mail server got compromised. An attacker took it over because all of the details on closing and buying houses is public. So the attackers always look for $2 or $3 million homes, and that's who they target. And then they went after this couple. And as of today, the couple is still out the money. They weren't able to move into their house because they transferred the money, so the bank's not liable. Now, they're filing suit against the settlement company to try to get their money back, and that has to go to court, and that could take a year or two to settle in court. But that's the problem. If you don't think you're a target, you let your guard down. And it would have been as simple as them picking up the phone. If they would have just called the closing company or called somebody, or they would have got a certified check, it could have been avoided. But they were under the assumption that who would target them, who would go after them, and email must be secure. And unfortunately, they're one of the many, many victims that we run across.
Yeah, as a real estate agent, that's one of the things that when I'm taking a listing, and we're going through the paperwork, I always advise them to say, listen, it's part of the cybersecurity warning that we give them, is to say, we will never ask you for money. Yep. We will never text you for money. We will never email you for money. We will never even ask you for money. If anybody says that they're me asking you for money, don't pay it and give me a call. And that's a part of my spiel when I'm helping my clients. So thanks for reassuring me that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I wish everyone would do that and tell their clients. Yeah. And just because we're in tax season, as a reminder to everyone, the IRS in the United States does not communicate via email with taxpayers. They do not. So if you get an email from the IRS saying anything about your taxes, delete it, grab small children and run. Do not walk to the nearest exit, but do not trust the email. The IRS, even during COVID, does not communicate via email. So don't trust it.
Are they only do mail, like postage?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I've got a CPA. He always says that they won't call or email you. So leave that one alone as well. So Dr. Cole, so what, tell me a little bit about you. What do you like to do? What's a day in the life of a CIO, P
PITA, CIA, whatever.
I would be one of those people when I was younger. My dad sat me down and he said, find something you love to do and you never need to work a day in your life. Okay. So I don't consider myself really working. I was very blessed. I bought and sold a couple of companies. So I really work now because I love it. And if I didn't work, I think my spouse would kill me because I'm an annoying person. So she's like, go to the office, get out of the house. But yeah, so typical day for me is I get up about 4:35. I don't wake up with an alarm clock because I believe your body needs sleep and there's rhythms of when you wake up. So if you're in the middle of a deep sleep, cleaning out your brain and the alarm clock goes off, that stuff is still in your brain. And that's why sometimes you could sleep 7 or 8 hours and be foggy all day because you didn't let the cycle complete. So I wake up on my own around 4:35. I'll get up, I'll do some journaling, I'll plan out my day, and I'll set my intentions. I then head over to the gym. I'll work out for about an hour, hit the sauna, and then I'm in the office working by about 7:38. Usually I'll record a couple of videos for my different podcasts and shows that are out there. I'll then do team sync ups. I'll then usually have about 2 or 3 hours of client calls to work on deliverables. I'll do these types of podcasts with great people like you. And then one of the things I always do every day is my assistant knows my peak performance is about 50 minutes with a 10 minute break. So I have 2 60-minute periods, one at 11 and one at 2, that's when I actually get my real work done. So if you really look at it on any given day, I'm really actively working on the business for 2 hours. And all of the rest of the time is business development, client calls, interviews, working with the team and managing the company.
It sounds like you're pretty regimented. You're disciplined with the time, the way that you spend your time.
Yeah, it's a misnomer because when I tell people I schedule out my entire day. If you look at any given day from, I even schedule out the gym, exercise. I mean, everything is fully scheduled from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., 100% scheduled. I even schedule out dinner. I schedule out time with my queen, which she doesn't necessarily like because she says I'm not a business, but I schedule everything. And people are like, man, that's so exhausting. I said, no, it's so easy because now you just follow the calendar. If you have a doctor's appointment, you're not going to miss it. You're going to look at 2:30. You're going to get up, drive to the doctor, or I guess now it's telemedicine, and you're going to get it done. When things are scheduled, it makes it easy. What makes life complicated and drains your energy is when you have a 3-hour block and you're going to sit there and go, what do I do? What do I do? So to me, I prioritize what needs to be done. I schedule it out. And then all I do is just follow my schedule every single day. And it makes life so easy and so enjoyable.
Is it typically recurring? You know, so that you've got that 11 a.m. and that 2 p.m. Do you have the same thing on at 3 p.m.? Is that recurring?
I try to do that. So like every morning, 6 a.m. is exercising. That's always recurring. When I eat my meals, because I'm very regimented on health, that's occurring. The rule that I have with my assistant is things like the 11 o'clock and the 2 o'clock. If she needs to move for a client, like if we have a client and the only availability they have is 11 o'clock, then she's allowed to move my thinking time. That's what we call it, but she's not allowed to delete it. So I actually color code my calendar. So the reds must stay. You can move them around, but they must stay within a 24-hour period. Yellows can be moved within a week, and green are things that are optional. So if something comes up and she needs to move it, she can. And I'll tell you, finding an amazing world-class assistant, it took me 5 years and 11 different executive assistants. But the one I have now is she basically sets everything up. She knows how I think in my business. And I just show up in the morning and execute my calendar.
How long has she been with you for?
Just going on 1.5 years.
And where did you find her?
I actually just found her on LinkedIn, where I tried different recruitment agencies and different virtual assistants. None of them worked. So I just put out there and I was just honest. This is what I want. Mm-hmm. I'm a little difficult to work with. And I even tell them, I said, my previous assistant, she resigned after 9 months. And this is exactly what she told me. She says, Eric, you're the nicest kindest, sweetest psychopath I've ever worked for, but I can't handle you anymore. She goes, I'm a super nice guy. I'm just very demanding in what I want and how I operate. So she actually replied back, and I'm like, okay, anybody that replies back to that ad is either amazing or mentally unstable. And I'm going to bet on the first one, because it's like, I mean, I just put everything out there. And to me, the more honest you are with hiring and what you really want, the better candidate you're ultimately going
to
get.
Well, Eric, I think I'm going to ask to borrow your description of yourself, and perhaps I may use that in my own hiring process. You describe somebody that I know well.
Exactly.
So, Eric, so I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. And I know that you also do a certification. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how somebody could get in touch with you about that?
Absolutely. So like I said, I found one of the problems is most organizations have really good executives. They have really good technical security folks, but that chief information security officer isn't strategic enough and doesn't understand business. So I created a CISO cert that has knowledge transfer. It also has coaching with me and a private group that you can go in and enter. And if you're interested, you can go to secure-anchor.com/CISO. And I have a free ebook you can download, find out more details, and then you can sign up for a consultation and we can enroll you in the CISO cert if that's something of interest to you.
Say that website one more time, please.
Secure-anchor.com. That's my main company website. And then if you do /CISO, that's for the CISO cert.
When did they ask for all your private information when you go onto that website?
Immediately. I mean, you must enter a credit card, your social security data. I mean, you can't even get the homepage to load if you don't give away
your mother's maiden name.
Exactly. Your favorite color, where you went to school.
Fantastic. I'm going to be suspect there. All right, Eric, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for your time today. And if you're a listener or a viewer and you want to learn more about the cybersecurity world, visit Dr. Eric Cole's website, and God bless you. Thank you.
Hate the feeling of missing out and not knowing where to start? Aside from grabbing a copy of The Real Estate Evolution, the 10-step guide to CPI, we also encourage you to join our ever-growing group, the Consistent and Predictable Income Community. Apply for a membership on Facebook and visit us at thecpicommunity.com online to listen to our previous superstar interviews.
Hey, I just had the best 45 minutes interviewing Dan Rochon. He's from Virginia, right outside the D.C. area. He's been in a stable market for a long time.
Within 18 months, he'd created so much success where he was actually able to buy the brokerage as a real estate agent.
Dan is a leader of vision, focus, and passion. His enthusiasm is truly infectious.
He just came out with a book for real estate agents, kind of help people pivot. We went through and talked about how to succeed in adversity, some of his big traits out there.
If you are still listening, it is because you align with the CPI community. That means that you love to learn. You are ambitious, qualified, smart, and professional. Mostly, you understand that you're in charge to design your life. If you do not want to wait until next show is posted, I invite you right now to visit www.thecpicommunity.com, which is the official website of the CPI community. There, you'll have access to eavesdrop on past conversations I've had with the top salespeople, business owners, and entrepreneurs. The content is free, and there's no opt-in. If you really want to hit the ground running, I encourage you to apply on the homepage of thecpicommunity.com to become CPI certified. It is a compensated service, and those that have become certified have reported back that they have more than tripled their business sales and done so in 20% less time. The CPI certification is a part of the CPI curriculum, which is the blueprint where you will learn the proprietary process of CPI, which is the key to having consistent and predictable income for salespeople without letting time, money, and relationships fall through the cracks. Lastly, I invite for you to share this podcast with others who are competitive, love to learn, assertive, relationship-based, self-starters just like you, so they can also benefit. And please leave us a rating or a review
and subscribe now so that you'll be notified of the next show. Thank you again. I'll see you on the next show. To your success.
If you're a real estate agent and you're located outside of the Washington, D.C. area, and you have a client that wants to buy a home, sell a home, or invest in real estate in the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C., Maryland area, consider to refer to me. I promise that when you do so, we'll treat them like gold, update you throughout the process, and most importantly, we'll make you look good. And we'll pay you a nice referral fee. If you're a real estate agent in the Northern Virginia, Maryland, or Washington, D.C. area, and you're seeking certainty and predictability in your business, contact me now. I'd love to be able to set up a conversation to show you how we can help you to close transactions every single month of the year. Just imagine January, February, March, April, May, every month of the year that you have income coming into your pocket to help you and your family. Hit me up on social media or email me, Dan@greetingsvirginia.com. Love to set up a time to chat.